Hello and welcome to The Improverbial, a podcast where we unearth obscure sayings and phrases from around the world, invent absurd new proverbs, and talk about things mundane, spurious, irrelevant, and profound. I am the capitalist, Pete Kirkwood.
And I'm Lisa Favette, the tilt thinker. I've been doing and coaching improv for many years. Pete and I have been doing improv together for some of those years. This podcast is a mashup of Pete's interest in the science of well-being, my background in education and human development, our shared fascination with the world's idiomatic weirdness, and our superpowers in improv comedy. We are the Improverbializers.
Woohoo!
Yeah!
Hello, friends, family, and famous people. Welcome to this episode of the Improverbial Podcast. In this episode, we're going to explore a famous saying that all of you probably know, and it is thick as thieves. They are thick as thieves. The meaning of this phrase is to be in cahoots, to be like very friendly in a way that may very well be up to no good. It might also kind of imply secrecy. You know this phrase, right?
Yeah, thick as thieves.
Yeah, you and I, we're thick as thieves.
Yes, you and I are thick as thieves.
That's right.
Thick meaning like this connotation of like closeness, right? That, you know, we're real thick with each other. And then that thieves gives that like conspiracy type.
So this one came like this has been in English since at least the very beginning of the 19th century. In the United States, June 16th, 1809, the Telegraph newspaper in Nashua, New Hampshire ran a story. It's called The House of a Thousand Candles by Meredith Nicholson. And in that, there's a quote that says, Rimbaud and Francis are as thick as thieves. That is the first documented instance of this that I could find in the United States. But it may very well have been around before then, because how else would people know what that meant? Originally, it came from the French, as far as I could find. And in the French, it's a translation of this phrase, s'entendre comme la ronce en foire, which means to get along like thieves at a fair. And the French phrase means like to be, you know, like ours, to be complicit in with another person in an activity which may or may not be lawful. And as you're alluding to, there was once a connotation of the word thick as meaning kind of friendly or intimate. This is a totally archaic meaning and really only survives, as far as I can find, in this phrase. I don't think there's any other phrase in which the word thick means like friendly.
We should bring it back though, Pete. I'm so thick with Pete, you know.
Like, I think people would kind of get it, you know?
Yeah, they would get it. It makes sense. I'm thick with them.
But yeah, you got other stuff on the origins and stuff meaning this?
Yeah, you know, that I found one page that gave this phrase in a lot of different languages, all of them having this French translation of to get on like thieves at a fair. The Spanish has a little bit of a different, it's to get on like wolves from the same litter. Uh-huh. Which I like that, to get along like wolves from the same
because
litter.
I like how a kind of, you know, wolves are probably not that friendly to people that are not, or within to other their, animals that aren't in their litter.
Yeah.
So I can see why, how it connotes that slightly menacing or slightly counter.
Yeah. And as you had said, this seeing it in 1809, I think you said that they do feel that it was around orally, like verbally, it was around for probably some time prior to that, but we don't know exactly when that was because it wasn't written down.
Yeah, and we should note that this one, it was actually submitted by a listener. So we thank you for those kind of submissions.
Hey, yeah, thank you,
listeners.
Please
don't be shy about that.
We appreciate hearing from you.
So where I went with this, as I was thinking about, diving into it a little bit, I was like, well, are thieves thick? And thick, you know, has this archaic meaning of friendly, and that's obviously the superficial meaning of this one. But I wanted to think about the other meanings of thick. There's, you know, one of like means like sort of thick, like fat or something, mm-hmm. right? And I couldn't find really any information on whether thieves are thick or fatter than the rest of us. But the other meaning of thick would be like not clever.
Very smart. Yeah.
And so I did find actually some interesting information on that. I found that delinquents and criminals average IQ scores of 8 to 10 points lower than non-criminals, despite all your Ocean's 11 or whatever, these movies where there's like brilliant mastermind thieves. Mm-hmm. I found a study by this legal library called jrank.org, a study of 437th grade boys in Pittsburgh that measured IQ against self-reported participation in delinquent acts. And boys who committed such acts, such as stealing cars, breaking and entering, or selling drugs, scored 8 to 10 IQ points lower than boys who had not. Of course, these were boys who had self-reported doing these illicit ads. So maybe there's the smarter ones probably just lied, right?
I know. Their thickness also went into their survey participation. Probably exactly. Not a good idea.
Exactly.
And of course, you know, we do have to know IQ tests have really been a bit debunked, right? Well, culturally.
I have some more information on a more subtle analysis of this, yeah. Which is they broke this idea of IQ into two categories, performance IQ and verbal IQ, where performance IQ is like nonverbal, attention to detail, manual design, construction, visual puzzle solving. That would be performance IQ. And the visual IQ is like general factual knowledge, like abstract reasoning, mental arithmetic, vocabulary. And criminals have performance IQ scores that are very similar to the general population, but their verbal IQ scores, remember this is like math, vocabulary, or abstract reasoning, mm-hmm. are substantially lower, even when you control for things like race, class, and reading ability. The suggestion is then that it's really the verbal IQ. Mm. It's like people who have normal intelligence with regard to kind of the physical world, mm-hmm. But lower than normal intelligence with regard to sort of abstract ideas, which are the statistically more likely to engage in criminal activity.
That's interesting. So totally. Linguistic intelligence is something to think about.
Something about the ability to express yourself in the world and the ability to kind of comprehend abstract thoughts. I read one theory on this, which had to do with how things like theft, murder, rape would have been, are sort of like maybe part of the kind of evolutionary story of humanity where like, you know, pre-humans were probably more violent and more mm-hmm. prone to that sort of thing than maybe modern people are. And then that there's sort of the strictures of society that get imposed on people mm-hmm. that tend to kind of restrain these kind of, I call them natural, but like kind of primordial impulses, let's say. And then maybe there's this sort of this abstract reasoning is a later evolutionary thing. And maybe that, I don't know, this may be just.
Yeah. Like this has always existed. We have these social constructs that say this is not right or good. So some people are able to tamper that while others who can't talk right, who can't talk good, might have more of a tendency to break through that.
Yeah. Social but then construct. Also like if you're not able to get a job or to have a livelihood that has to do with higher level reasoning and stuff like that, your alternatives are more limited. Like maybe it's like is it cause or is it effect?
Well, you know? Yeah, I think that's where it goes if I'm say dumb linguistically, but I got all my needs taken care of, I probably will be less likely to go out and steal something. Mm-hmm. You know what I looked at? I looked at about thieves and about thieves that were had a, like a close, like they worked together in collaboration in order to pull off some type of heist. Cause you know, you got thievery and then you got burglaries and you got robbers. And for me, thieves connotates this idea of like really secretive and almost more smart. I don't know if there's like a little more stereotypical
that we're talking about, like in the movies where they're like the clever mastermind thieves.
Exactly. Uh-huh. And so, I was looking up this, one, it's actually relatively modern. It's considered the heist of the century.
Nice.
It's called the Antwerp Diamond Heist. I don't know if you remember
this. Diamonds.
So many diamonds in Antwerp. Gems. 2003, this happened. $100 million worth of diamonds were taken from a safe that was two stories below the earth. And of course, this huge vault. And a mastermind, Leonardo Notar Bartolo, he's of the Turin crime ring. He brought in four other guys. He never gave their names, but their nicknames were Speedy, Monster, Genius, and King of Keys.
Get out. This is a film.
This is a film. Somebody's bought the rights to this, I'm sure. It took 18 months of planning. They had rented an apartment within the building where this safe was, as well as Leonardo. He came in as a diamond trader. And so he was coming in and out.
They got used to him coming and going.
Used to him. They would be more lax when he would come and go. He found out all the alarm systems, all of the thermal.
And then they did it.
All the thermal motion sensors, and they did it and they pulled it off. They got $100 million worth of diamonds. Now, this is what's interesting.
Well, we know his name, so he must have got caught.
Yeah.
That's so smart.
Arrests were made. Time was served, but the diamonds remain uncovered. They've never gotten those diamonds back. And let me tell you how they get caught. Because 18 months of planning, you're thinking these guys are masterminds, yes, right? They did a lot.
Okay.
Where they messed up was
I didn't say the getaway, but the follow through. So they got out, and then two of them, Leonardo and Speedy. Yes. Speedy. Mm-hmm. They were going to go to France, drive to France and burn all of their stuff. All the evidence.
Yep.
And Speedy started to have some anxiety and he just really wanted this. He did not want to be in the car with any of this. So he actually threw it out the window in Belgium and a farmer found it.
Oh my
God.
Don't even tell me.
And they found a receipt of a deli sandwich that Leonardo had bought. And they had surveillance of him buying that sandwich at this deli.
Oh my Lord.
And this was all then connected back.
This is totally a movie.
It's totally a movie. And
I'll play the farmer.
Well, that's what I was just going to say. You know, these were, these in Belgium, because I lived in Belgium for a while, it's extremely tidy country.
Yeah.
So throwing something out into a farmer's field, like that was not a good idea because culturally Belgium is extremely tidy.
And a lot of Belgian
tidy.
Farmers double as detectives, I heard. Oh, sorry. No, this part
is real.
We can't lie on this part of the podcast.
I can totally see a Belgian farmer like, they're just taking their daily walk, the perimeter of their land.
With their broom, sweeping the edges of their fields.
Sweeping up all the dirt on their land. And this person called the police. They didn't think it was anything to do with this heist, but they called the police because you just don't do that. They're rule followers too.
Wow.
So that was their mistake. In France, it's a little more lax. If they had done that in France, it would have been probably Sacrebleu. Not seen. Yeah.
So, gosh, man. And so Leonardo got caught.
Leonardo
like Speedy and Genius and
Monster
Anvil
and, the King
and
of
Monster
Kings.
Face and Popcorn Charlie,
Popcorn
whatever
Charlie.
Their names are, they all got away.
I don't know. Leonardo did. I am not sure about these his accomplices.
He got caught.
Leonardo got caught. Yeah.
Well, we'd know their names if they got caught.
He gave these nicknames and he never gave the real names.
They probably didn't know each other's names. That would have been even smarter.
That could be.
Well, so, you know, these are bad guys, right? I mean, you know, if we like a respectable society and everything like that, but it's kind of fun. It's fun being thick as thieves. And it's also fun doing naughty things. Especially when you're doing with friends.
Pete, are you going to talk about something naughty you did?
I wonder why that is. No, I mean, actually I was going to go somewhere else with it a little bit because it seems to me that it's fun doing anything out of the ordinary, right? That seems novel and fresh and potentially like risky or just outside of your normal, sphere of comfort. So I feel like, for me, I've had that experience. I started a volunteer-based disaster relief organization, which was called All Hands Volunteers, is now called All Hands and Hearts. Check out their website, hands.org. But in doing disaster response work, it's like something totally outside of your ordinary life. But when you do it with other people, even total strangers, you build this rapport and this really strong, amazing connection. And like in some ways, like the dirtier and messier and more unpleasant the work is, the stronger the bonds are that you form. And so I sort of think that probably in engaging in crime is similarly like stressful and takes you outside of your normal world. And there's probably a sort of very like it cements bonds between people in some ways, just like probably being in the military and being in combat and all that sort of thing. Likewise, doing kind of really, really intense volunteer stuff, or it's all like similar. And we can find those kind of connections that criminals might make when involved in some elaborate diamond heist in Antwerp. But you know, you can do that just like mucking out somebody's basement after a hurricane too, with other people.
Right. Like the bigger the obstacles you overcome, the bigger the bond and the bigger the connection between the people. I agree with that.
Yeah. So like we could be thick as thieves. We could be like thick as volunteers or thick as whatever.
We need to do some hardships, Pete.
We need more hardship in our lives.
More hardship. I was looking at this as well. Like this idea of thick as thieves, like kind of, people that are close in your life. And you know, when you're younger, it's about the BFF, like, oh, I have a best friend. And then maybe when you're,
it's not F though. Like it's just BF. Cause like it turns out that it really wasn't F.
It's not
like your BFF from when you were 12.
Is it?
Not anymore.
No.
Oh, no offense. Tim Tanner. Sorry. Still love you, man.
I was just going to say, I'm not still friends with that person. But then I don't know if it's in your 20s or something when you're looking for this quote unquote soulmate, you know, goes BFF to soulmate.
Oh, it does.
And now, for me, I'm really like, I don't have a BFF and I don't have necessarily a soulmate, but I'm pretty darn happy with my relationships. And this thought of this balance of the balance of self-reliance along with leaning on others, right? Like I need to have confidence and competence that I'm okay just as I am, but that's a little bit lonely. Mm-hmm. I like doing this podcast with you, Pete.
Oh, I like doing with you too. Yeah. It's paradoxical because it seems like people are going to like you better if you don't really ask for much from them and you just do a bunch of things for them. But like the truth is, like, I feel like relationships get a lot stronger when you actually ask for and give things to each other. Like weirdly, asking for help almost makes people often like feel more love for you, I find. You know
yeah.
what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. That like there's this balance. Exactly. That you're not alone in this world and we've got each other's back.
Improv is a lot like that too, because you have to take risks and you have to hope and rely on another person to catch you when you fall.
Yeah.
When we're about to demonstrate that in the second part of our podcast today. Yeah,
Pete always catches me. Pete, you know who we're thick as thieves with?
Who?
The Boardman Review. They are so kind to us.
Bunch of thieves? No, I mean, sorry. No, they're good.
They're good. They're not thieves. Yeah, no. What's going on, Pete? No. What are you trying to do? Anyway, the Boardman Review, they sponsor all of this and we couldn't be more grateful. And they also provide us with the funding for this Proverbatron, which is a gorgeous piece of machinery. I love
the diamonds that you encrusted it with.
I don't know where I got these diamonds. They just seem to show up in a Belgian
field.
Well,
you did this live in Belgium, remember?
Yeah. So anyway, put on your sunglasses because there's a lot of bling on this machine. Mm-hmm. And let me get this started. I'll push this diamond encrusted button.
Alpaca.
Our first word is alpaca.
All right. I'm going to sidle on over here and press this bespangled button and see what comes out.
Cucumber.
Cucumber. The word from the Proverbaton is cucumber.
Alpaca and cucumber. And just a note to our very loyal listeners, this second part is entirely made up. We are improvising. We are...
Don't believe a word we say.
No, we're a big bunch of thieves and liars.
And boozlers. What fun to have a proverb from South America. I have done a little bit of travel there and I love traveling in South America, and Spanish is a language that's dear to my heart. I'll call it, of course, I don't have this one in Spanish because it comes from a native language in Peru, but the translation into English, the fresher the cucumber, the richer the alpaca. Mm-hmm. The fresher the cucumber, the richer the alpaca.
Yeah.
Such a fun one.
It is such a fun one. And I don't think there's many people that know how important the alpacas were to royal society mm-hmm. in South America for right. so long.
True. And I think a lot of people don't realize that cucumbers originated in the mountains of Peru.
The very high altitudes in Peru. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Actually, I think concombera is a native word. Isn't that right? I think it's because alpacas love to eat them so much.
Yeah, they love cucumbers.
Yeah, it means the fruit of it actually literally means the fruit of the alpaca.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the cucumber or cucumbera. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think, you know, when we think of alpacas and we think it's a packing animal, I think a lot of us think of the adorableness of them.
Right. And the sweaters.
And their sweaters mm-hmm. and the fine materials you can make from them.
Is that alpaca you're wearing?
You know, I do have alpaca on.
Yeah.
Now I decided.
What a happy coincidence.
Yeah. I decided that this is not like, it's just to give a little description of what I have a hood with a alpaca face on it. Mm-hmm. And the arms are the legs of the alpaca. And it's kind of like a bearskin rug, but an alpaca cardigan.
Yeah. You know, what's amazing about the markings on that. Markings on, which as you all know, like the markings that occur naturally on an alpaca, they do have that oblong shape.
The oblong shape of the cucumber.
Well, you know, that was the legend, you know, that right. has to, you right. know, first of all, alpacas love to eat cucumbers,
yes,
which grew
do.
Abundantly in their native habitat.
Yeah.
Just wild.
Yeah.
It's in Peru. It's really hard to walk around off the trails without
encountering
cucumbers. And then alpacas just love them so much. And then, you know, there's this funny oblong shape that appears on their markings that you mm-hmm. have right there on
you
your,
see
on
it right
your
here,
cloak
right
you're
over
wearing.
Here,
exactly.
Right? Yep.
And so, you know, there's all these overlaps between cucumbers and alpacas that like, I had no idea about this until I started looking into this.
Research this one. Yeah. There is a lot of overlap. And I think we can also say that this has come out of favor, this saying, because of the tourism down in South America.
Mm-hmm.
That the cucumbers You don't find them as much as you would have. Like when you talk about, you go off the trail and there's a cucumber. I mean, that's how it was.
Yeah.
But because of tourism, what happens?
Well, it's harder to find them though, further from the trails and stuff.
Yeah.
And as you were saying, like, it's a really big part of native culture that, mm-hmm. That cucumbers are part of, were like reserved for royalty. Like the only folks that were supposed to eat cucumbers historic or, you know, traditionally were like royalty and alpacas.
And alpacas.
These are just supposed to only the two.
Right.
And so there's something culturally insensitive about this, like, gobbling up cucumbers all on the, wherever you find them.
Yeah. Until Jose Guatemala. Jose Guatemala. He was just a regular villager, wasn't he?
Yeah. And it's so funny that he happens to be named after a different country. Mm-hmm. But yeah, and that's something that people often forget, that he actually was Peruvian.
He was Peruvian. Absolutely. He was native to Peru. Mm-hmm. And he dared to eat a cucumber that was only reserved for alpacas and royalty.
Yeah. And I remember, like, I mean, from what I looked at, he was like, meh.
Yeah. He was like, what's the big deal?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was like, what is, and he tried to like prepare it in different ways. He put it in with, mm-hmm. with butter. He put it in with mm-hmm. couscous. He put it in with
quinoa.
Quinoa. He put it in with cui, which is guinea pig.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. I didn't know about that.
And, every time he was like, meh.
Yeah. I mean, I love cucumbers, but like, mm-hmm. they're not like, you don't, it seems like a funny thing to reserve for royal, consumption, but you know, anyway, Jose Guatemala, this was right around the 30s and mid 30s that he started his famous mm-hmm. restaurant.
Yeah.
And you know, it's called Jose Guatemala. So that's why it's so famous. And it's, you know, because he experimented so much and because it was kind of a tourist attraction, he just had, it was like a cucumber based menu.
Yeah.
And so it was kind of, the food wasn't that, never heard that the food was that great, but it was really super popular. It was like the Hard Rock Cafe in Peru.
I was just going to say, it really was not that great, but it was just one of these chain effects, you know. Did you go to Jose Guatemala when you were in Peru? You didn't go?
Yeah.
Oh, you didn't get an authentic experience, did you?
And Jose Guatemala was always seen, wearing things made of alpaca. In fact, they got to the point where they started calling him the alpaca.
They called him the alpaca.
Jose Guatemala, the alpaca.
I think this is a replica of one. Now, I should just clarify. This is not a real alpaca. This is a replica of what something Jose Guatemala would have worn.
Yeah. I like it that you wore today's special for this.
It's a little bit warm. Brand. I actually am going to take it. Do you mind if I just,
no, it's fine. It's kind of warm.
It's kind of heavy.
But so anyway, Jose Guatemala, you know, achieved real heights of fame and wealth in his native Peru.
Yes, he did. Mm-hmm. And he kind of broke out of that mold of, this is only reserved for royalty. Well, he was like a nouveau riche, and mm-hmm. he was started to be considered royalty amongst the common people.
Right. Right. He made a huge fortune mm-hmm. and became synonymous with, cucumber cuisine, mm-hmm. in Peru. And, the slogan of his restaurant, of course, became so famous,
the fresher the cucumber, the richer the alpaca. He being the alpaca.
It really went down in popular culture.
And I'd say the other thing that his restaurant was famous for was there, if it was your birthday, you got a free, brownie that was of course made of cucumber mm-hmm. with a candle in it. The waiters all came around and sang to you.
Yeah. And the thing, you know, let's talk about the connotations of this. So it's on the one hand, his kind of rags to riches story, mm-hmm. Jose Guatemala, you know, rose to the heights of tourism and wealth. Mm-hmm. But there's also a sort of connotation where like someone who's willing to do whatever it takes, even if it means kind of fudging a little on cultural sensitivity and maybe making the most of something that isn't that great. That's what you say. You say it's come to mean that the fresher the cucumber, the richer the alpaca.
It's almost meaning like it's not that actually a good quality.
Kind of cut some corners to get where he's going. Yeah.
I wonder, Pete, though, something on a lighter side, do we want mm-hmm. to sing that birthday chant that the folks would do? We can do it in English.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Sure. Yeah. Let's do it. Ready?
It's your birthday, put this alpaca on your head.
Time for the brownie, time for the cucumbers, everybody, yay.
Hey!
Yeah, that's, it's...
It still rings. I really like that jingle.
I like it too.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of The Improverbial. Do you want to improvise with us? You can, yes, and The Improverbial Podcast and be a sponsor. please reach out to theimproverbial@gmail.com.
Yeah.